Welcome to the podcast. I'm Garrett Drake, and I'm here with my guest star. What's your name again?
Brian Smith.
Yeah, this is Brian Smith.
Oh, heck yeah, dude.
And we're going to have some very intellectual and psychological conversation about the subject of religion. Stay tuned.
So, you go to church, I'm guessing. That's why you want to talk about religion?
I am, yes. It inspires a lot of interest in the matter. Dan Brown's The Da Vinci Code, which I will probably reference later.
Okay.
Talks about the Holy Grail, and that the Holy Grail is not a cup, but a woman. And that Jesus married Mary Magdalene, his mother, and they have a giant, like, bloodline, secret bloodline. And that interests me.
This is just the Da Vinci Code, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
This interests me greatly.
I've done papers on it. That I've never read.
Yeah.
I wanted to.
Oh my God, it's fantastic.
I don't know enough about religion to actually, like, understand any of the yeah. symbolism that's happening.
Yeah. Those things fascinate me because I grew up religious and then I started questioning it after a 2-year long hiatus entering my high school life. And I do go to church now,
okay. But
not to return to Christianity, but to live more like a Christian man, because I lack the ideals that they have, but I myself now contain principles that cannot correlate with that of the Bible. Does that make sense?
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
It makes a bit of sense.
So now I'm, like, very interested in the psychology of religion, because I'm there okay. In the service, and I'm asking why. You know?
Like, the psychology of religion is in, like, why people believe in it.
Yes.
Or how the stories were written to affect people certain ways. What form of psychology do you like viewing religion under?
I like asking why people believe in it. I like, not so much psychologically, but I like questioning the text itself. I don't like questioning it, but I do. I'm not, like, voiding the truthfulness of it, but I just like to, pick it apart and ask myself, who wrote this?
Yeah.
Were they really there? Because another one of Dan Brown's quotes is, the Bible is a man-made text. It's not given from the heavens.
Right.
Like, the Roman Catholic Church has greatly edited it and censored it with the Mary Magdalene thing and everything. So I like to be curious about these things that don't exist, but we believe in them strongly.
So, just curious, have you ever read through the entirety of the Bible?
I have not. Okay. I've wanted to. But, you know, I'm not a Christian anymore, so that would be more of a task now, not so much like an experience.
Okay. So, you said you were Christian.
Yes.
Do you view yourself more as agnostic or atheistic? Do you view yourself as not believing entirely, or do you just say you're not sure?
I believe
something could be up there,
mm-hmm.
but there's no way of proving it.
Yeah,
there's no way of believing it.
That's exactly my perspective. That's okay. Agnostic, correct?
That's agnosticism.
I definitely, as I've said, I don't outright say, you know, Christianity is false.
Mm-hmm.
Because I really don't know. I can't say that it is false. I don't have evidence to back it up. And even more so, I think religion is important to the mind as it develops. I think children should be taught religion when they're young, and that's why I am.
Why do you think that? Why do you think they should be when they're young? So that they can choose for themselves later whether or not to actually believe?
Well,
or do you think teaching them those principles when they are young affects how they're going to perceive it?
It does. That was one of my points. Something from Stephen Rice, a psychologist at Ohio State University. He mentioned that religion satisfies some 16 essential innate desires. And I think that was the thing that I was touching upon when I've always believed that children should be growing up on religion, because it satisfies these desires of community and spirituality and, you know, interdependence,
right,
that are key elements to one's life. It easily introduces them to many different things, maybe even creativity in a sense, like believing these supernatural things created what we now perceive as the world.
Yeah, it also just answers questions
that
kids have, because they're curious about everything.
Mm-hmm. It makes more sense out of the world, and I think that's a grand thing that people shouldn't miss out on. Now, I wanted to talk about radicalism and extremism.
Okay.
So, what happens when an individual or a collective body uses their religion to control others? So, psychologically speaking, I wanted to highlight that group polarization explains how these groups of people do such radical things in a group more so than they would by themselves.
It's also just groupthink, because once you're in group A, right, you don't want to be the odd man out. You don't want to challenge what everyone else is thinking, so you're just going to go along with what everyone thinks.
Oh, yeah.
And then eventually, if you do agree with mostly what they're saying, the rest of it's just going to get to you, and then you're going to be over here, right? And then you're going to be strongly opposing that other side, because that other side, the same thing is happening, where they're becoming way more polarized in their viewpoint. When you talk about radicalism and extremism, the first thing that comes to mind religiously is that one group that followed the one guy. I forgot his name, but they drank the poison Kool-Aid and it killed
thousands
of people in that one town. I don't remember his name, but like that's the first thing that comes to mind is that.
yeah. James Warren Jones, was it?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
The poisoned Kool-Aid guy, according to Google. So, yeah, you mentioned groupthink. I actually hadn't written that down. That was a nice observation of yours. Very intellectual. Now, these terrorist groups, they recruit through... They rely on people to self-radicalize themselves and into thinking that these terrorist groups are going to give them adventure and glory, and what they're doing is right. Even they interviewed like would-be suicide bombers and other terrorists who were caught in the act, but in the suicide bomber's case, you know, the bomb wouldn't go off or something. And none of them seemed psychotic or suicidal. They were really believing that what they were doing was for justice.
Right, they believed that they'd become a martyr. They were dying for their cause.
Yeah.
Their cause was righteous.
So this groupthink is even more so dangerous when you're surrounded by people with guns, first of all, and then second of all, who are very emotionally driven towards this religious goal, that they'll set themselves out in public and hurt people, and you don't want to like challenge them.
It just scares me when people think that they're doing the right thing by hurting others.
Yes. And that is a very strange psychological phenomenon. You know, they don't seem... You wouldn't get those results from a psychological test. But they go out and do these things simply for, you know, righting the world, putting it back into its place. So that I found that fascinating.
Yeah, it's, I don't know, I never really seem to understand why those people do that, but, you know,
it's
so polarized.
Yeah, it's exactly what you said.
That's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that polarization is really coming through.
Mm-hmm. Amen. What is a cult?
A cult's like a really small group. group of religiously like-minded people. That's what I think of when I think of a cult.
Yeah.
We're just like religious extremists, so extreme that like not many people believe it.
Yeah.
Because they're crazy. Because it's a cult. One thing I never understand with cults is how they're ever appealing to anybody.
Yes.
Because they're just so crazy and convoluted. It doesn't make sense to me how anyone could ever fall into a cult.
Yeah. It's largely, they first, I think, look for people who have been rejected by society or maybe have low self-esteem.
Okay.
Those are the usually the easiest people to prey on and say, like,
that's fair.
Yeah, we have glory for you. You have potential, even though no one else sees so.
Right. It's just they want to fit in a group.
Yeah.
And cults target people that don't have any group.
Yes. Either.
Right. Okay.
They draw them in with what they want to hear, and they do that with kind of like an explosion of exciting things, easy things to go in with, like a foot in the door effect.
Okay.
They
like easy things to follow, and then.
Yeah, yeah.
As you feel accepted and loved in this group, they just push more and more.
There's a comedy group called Whitest Kids You Know, and they have a sketch about these cults.
Okay.
And one of their lines goes, they're questioning, like, vaguely, when did the cult get like this? And then one of the lines is, you know, it started with softball. We started playing softball. And then it was, you always had to wear the t-shirts. And then you had to wear the robes, you know. And then you had to cut off sever ties with your family.
Yeah.
I think that's a good example. That's pretty funny to me.
It's comedic, but it's a funny
girl. Yeah, yeah.
So why are cult people so just crazy, crazy adamant about their cause?
Well, Brian, they have an us and they have an us versus them mentality.
Okay. I mean, all right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, us is in their community, and then them is everybody else who rejects them because they're a cult.
Them is in anyone who is
anyone
outside
who's not
of the cult.
Within the cult.
Yes.
Right?
Not necessarily who rejects them.
Yeah.
But yes, this is what you said. Would be considered group polarization. Once again, it's a repeating trend among this subject. And sometimes these cults are so immensely polarized that they don't even realize they're in one. Such as the Whitest Kids You Know sketch, you know?
That's crazy.
First you're playing softball.
That's crazy to believe that you wouldn't even realize that you were in a cult. That your views and the views of your peers were so crazily idolized or crazy ideological that's just wow.
Yeah, especially if you're born in one, which can happen.
Oh, I feel so bad for those people.
You're just not realizing this.
Dude, I totally forgot that people are born for a second.
People are born of wombs. You're right. Yeah, I think it's a very interesting thing. This the idea of oftentimes being raised into this twisted mentality, but also going into it midlife and then oftentimes not even realizing it.
That's what I was thinking, because like, what I think is crazy is going into and not realizing you're in a cult when you're already hitting like, in at least your 20s.
Yeah.
Because you have so much world experience and you've seen cults, and you're like,
well, not everyone sees
that's
cults.
Crazy.
But they
you read
they can hear about
you
them.
See
yeah.
The news of just these crazy cult things.
Yeah. Like crazy
that.
Cult thing.
Crazy cult things, like that one guy that just poisoned his entire cult. With Kool-Aid.
Yep. The Kool-Aid
like
guy.
James Monroe.
Oh man, that James Monroe.
Imagine you fell into that cult without realizing that now you were dead. In that cult, and now you just, oh yeah, you're waiting to being gone.
Yeah.
You oh yeah, when you should have oh knowed.
I think that might.
I'm sorry, say your point again. It was so bad.
Cults can even sometimes be classified as I don't know, terrorist groups. Radicals, definitely.
Definitely extremist radicals, yeah.
But they can commit massacres very easily. Who was the Kool-Aid guy? Wait, that's gonna give me a... Who poisoned his cult with Kool-Aid? Jim Jones.
Warren Jones. Okay. No, I just think it's crazy how much influence cults can have on society. Because, you know, there's been that saying, he's been sipping on the Kool-Aid a bit too long, you know? Like, he's going crazy.
Yeah.
I'm an old soul, so I have old soul references.
Yeah. Like,
I know that.
Oh, no. You're a 90s kid.
Judging by your face, I can tell that you have never heard that before.
I think I did when I learned about him. But
right.
Practice.
If you never learned about him, you never would have heard sipping the Kool-Aid. I've been saying that since I was like 8.
Yeah.
I was like, hey, sipping the Kool-Aid.
Wow.
I'm just an old soul, dude. But like, there have been so many crazy cults that have just influenced phrases and words that we say.
Mm-hmm.
On top of that, just general like policies have been affected by cults. It's like interest groups in government. They're like these tiny little things that you almost don't care about. And sometimes they just do something crazy and you're like, oh, now we got this thing to worry about. Cults have crazy amount of power.
For they do.
Like a small amount of people.
I think there are cults out there that we don't know exist that maybe even rule over us.
That scares me.
Yeah.
Imagine if there are people in the government right now that were part of a cult. That we don't know about. Or that we do know about.
Almost definitely. Thank you for listening to this special edition of Garrett's AP Psychology Podcast with
Brian.
With Brian. Have a splendid day.